Molly. Former worship leader turned mystic, your friendly neighborhood imagination doula and artist, I truly believe in the power of imagination, that creativity can lift us out of the darkest places, transforming us and our world as we come home to ourselves. I want you to know that you are darling and so loved, and that coming home to yourself and reclaiming your full expression is the most revolutionary thing that you could do. Welcome to the Darling Revolution Podcast. Hello, gorgeous human. Welcome back to the Darling Revolution Podcast. I am your host, Molly. And in today's episode, I spoke with my friend Allison Behrens Brawley. She is a self-care coach who empowers her clients through a focus on daily self-practices and a self-care focus during big life transitions as well. This conversation covers Allison's story, her deep dive into self-care out of necessity when she fell very ill unexpectedly, how we often get self-care all wrong. You might be surprised by this conversation. And a lot of practical tips to come back to yourself and reclaim your self-care. Hint, it's not as complicated as you're probably making it. This interview is brilliant, and I can't wait for you to listen. So let's get into it. Here is Allison Behrens Brawley. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Darling Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Molly, and I'm really, truly excited to welcome my guest today. Allison Behrens Brawley, CTA, CC, has spent several years recovering from perfectionism and attempting to live in the moment, learning to meditate and eating a lot of pizza. Through it all, she has endeavored to utilize a self-care routine for the betterment of herself, her relationships, and those around her. As someone who suffers from chronic illness and spent years as a caregiver to another chronically ill person, she's had to learn how to make self-care a priority every single day. She's worked for many years now to make her self-care routine work for her and has experienced invaluable growth and insight in the meantime. Realizing in a moment of absolute clarity that she was passionate about helping others develop their own self-care regimen, she pursued and completed certification through the Coach Training Alliance, earning the designation of CTA Certified Coach. Through working to implement positive self-talk, self-compassion, and intentional practices with her clients, she hopes to have a positive impact on every level for her clients and herself. She offers coaching, live speaking engagements, and other resources to spread the message that self-care is a necessity for everyone. I'm so excited to have you, Allison. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Molly. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you too. Welcome. And so this whole show, the focus as we are coming back into relaunching it is about helping folks come home to themselves and really reclaim their voices. And as you know, we can't do that without self-care. And
exactly.
Yeah. And it's become such a buzzword in the last 5 years or so that it's almost become like a garbage word, which is really frustrating for those of us who are in this space trying to help people with their own self-care. Right. So I'm excited for you to dive into it. And I'd love to just get into what is it about your story? Like, what are the connection points that brought you to this really important work?
So it's really interesting that you say it's become this buzzword in the last 5 years, because almost 10 years ago now, gosh, that blows my mind. In the beginning of 2013, I got so sick. I got very, 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 very sick. And I had been working a way more than full-time job and was just stressed, absolutely stressed. And I have a cardiac history. I was born with a heart defect, had to have a bunch of surgeries when I was little, teeny tiny, and have had a medical team, chronic illness my whole life. And I got, I ended up with sepsis is what it eventually, we figured out it was, but we didn't know that at first. And I very nearly died. And when I kind of got everything back together and woke up and my medical team kind of got to me, they said, you cannot live with the amount of stress you're living with. It just isn't going to happen. And of course, I was like, but I have to work and I have to do this and that, you know. And at that point, I think I was living with the assumption that anxiety and stress and really the PTSD that I was living with that I didn't really understand was just how people lived. I just thought everyone lived that way. And so I got home. My recovery was months long. And I had an incredible insomnia. And in the middle of the night, I started Googling things like how to be happier, how to lower your stress levels, how to not be so stressed. And this word that I had never heard at that point in time kept coming up, and it was self-care. And I thought, man, I've never heard of that. I don't know what that is. Like, does that like, you know, holistic, like, what does that mean? You know, because I had no idea. And it's so interesting that in just since I've started doing this work, it has become this really, I mean, even now it's pretty commodified and commercialized thing that we hear about all the time. But at that point, it was nowhere. I mean, you had to really, really search for it. And I kind of flailed around for several years trying to figure out exactly what self-care looked like for me. And it was not until I really understood from a deep perspective what I needed my life to look like and how my self-talk and self-compassion impacted that, that I was able to start doing the work that I did do that has gotten me to the place where I am. And I often say, like, and this is so, like, it's cliche and it's cliche to say it, but if I had not gotten sepsis, I am not sure I would be where I am today, because so much has happened since then that if I had not discovered self-care, I just, the stress levels that I've had since then, I would not have been able to manage.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point to make, because I tell people all the time, like, one of my factors that really brought me into the work that I'm doing was like tragedy and suffering and, you know, the death of a friend and all of these things. And it's really interesting because I'm seeing this pattern of everyone who's in this field is having this in common, where they know that it's life or death, really, to have self-care. And the people who don't realize that it's life or death just haven't had that situation necessarily yet.
And I hate to say that, but it's a pattern in my work with my clients too. People almost have to get to a real breaking point before they realize that they need to do really, really deep self-care work. And I think that's part of the thing that comes with self-care being such a buzz thing, is that people think that self-care is one thing, and the real deep work of self-care that comes with the, you know, in deep internal work, is not that. And it takes really, really having a you know, breakdown to the level of, you know, your emotions come to a point where you realize that you cannot go on like this, to come to that point. And unfortunately, it takes sometimes a really, really horrible circumstance to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to know, before we dig even deeper, like, how do you define self-care in your work, so that we can have a working definition that all of our listeners are like able to understand, and that they're not like, wait, are you talking about bubble baths? Are you talking about like taking myself on trips? Like, what are you talking about?
Gotcha. So for me, my very, very like simple definition of self-care is anything that one does for oneself that helps their physical, mental, and emotional health. And I do, in my practice, get into active self-care versus passive self-care. Active self-care being the very deep work of recognizing patterns and setting new habits and learning things about yourself so that you can build routines that work for you in a very real way. Whereas the passive self-care are those things that most people think of when they think, you know, self-care, the bubble baths, the massages, the weekends away, the wine nights, the kind of more commercialized, commodified self-care. And they're both completely legitimate forms of self-care. But the act of self-care for me in my practice is what I see creating more longer term change for my clients, and what I see creating deeper change as well.
Yeah. And I love that it can be a broad definition and it's all defined by the needs of the self, like the person. Like I tell people all the time in my work, for artists in particular and creatives, the most important work that you do is not learning how to draw. It's the internal work, and self-care is a huge part of that, from like brushing your teeth to getting to know your personality, maybe to taking a bath. Like all those things are encapsulated in that.
Exactly. And that's a big, I think, hurdle for a lot of people, is that they've kind of been told what self-care is. And your self, my thing that I always tell people is, your self-care is yours. My self-care is mine. And I cannot tell you what your self-care is going to be. My kind of like joke is, it's called self-care, not coach care. And so you have to define what your self-care is for you. And I think when people kind of have been told this is what self-care is, you know, no real room for wiggle room. Right. They don't realize that they can really, really define a very personalized, customized form of self-care for themselves in their everyday life.
Yeah. And I'd love to get into what that looks like more specifically with the work that you do with your clients. Like, what are some of the struggles that come up a lot as a self-care coach?
So a lot of my clients, the thing that I see a lot is that they have fallen into a position where they feel like someone else's expectations have to be met by them. Mm. And it's always, and I have lived there. I have lived in the neighborhood. It's not a great neighborhood. I wouldn't, you know, recommend it. But I can really resonate with that. And it's always kind of funny to me when I say to them, you know, you don't have to do that. And they go, I don't. I go, no. Do you want to do that? And they go, no. And I go, then you don't have to do it. They're like, oh my God, I don't have to do it. I don't have to do it. I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like this, you know, huge aha moment. And then the other thing that I see a lot, especially where we talk about the hiccup of, this is what self-care is supposed to look like, or I need to do self-care the right way, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is they'll say, well, I need my self-care to look like such and such. And I'll say, okay, but is that really important to you? And they'll say, well, no. And I'll say, okay, you've been trying to make that work. And if that's not working for you and you don't want that, I mean, that's not very important to you, you can just change that, or you don't have to do that. And it's like, yeah. I can change it. It's my self-care. I can change it. And so expectations of others is a really, really big hurdle that I see a lot in my practice. The other hurdle that I think I see a lot is that people come in thinking that they need one thing, and it turns out that they really, really need another. Like their motivation for coming in is, you know, they think this is the reason I'm here. And when we get down into it, you know, it's, oh, well, I really need to be focusing on this thing instead of this thing. And that only comes from those, you know, that deep work and those work that, you really only do if you're confronted with, I can't go on like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they'll come in and they'll say, I really think I need, you know, to be better organized and to get more done during the day. And instead it turns out, hey, guess what? You're doing too much and you need to stop doing so much. But they don't realize that, because they haven't really explored the fact that, hey, guess what? I've spread myself too thin, because they believe that they're doing everything they want to be doing. Their life looks the way they want it to look, and they just need to learn how to manage it better.
Mm.
And when we get into it, it's really, guess what? I don't want to have to manage all this, because it's making me feel like I can't do all of the things. And so those are the two biggest struggles that I see, is someone else's expectations or society's expectations or their own, expectations that they've put on themselves that are unrealistic get in the way. Or they come in believing that this is the problem and instead, or not the problem, but this is the motivation for a better self-care routine. And then it turns out, oh, wait, this actually is what we need to be focusing on. And it's always nice to see those aha moments come forward and they go, oh, and then it's like, okay, this is where the real work begins, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting to me because with both of those examples that you shared, there are connection points with the work that I do with helping people come back to themselves through creative practices. And like one of the biggest things I heard you talk about was really like agency and self-trust. And because that's, I come across that with people all the time that they think the problem is they don't have enough time, right? They're not being productive enough. They're not doing enough. And there's two things at play. There's like societal expectations that are total bullshit. And also that they think that they're not allowed to question anything. Like,
exactly.
So is that something that comes up with your clients as well?
Yes. I think too, and one of the things that you point out so well in your work and have, you know, one of the first things I saw from you that made me really resonate with your work is the idea that rest can be productive. Mm-hmm. That's another thing, you know, this idea that, you know, busyness is a status symbol, you know, too is a thing that really we have to work on when we start kind of setting these expectations for either a self-care routine. The other kind of work that I do occasionally in my practice is I help people that are in big transitions focus more on self-care. In both of those situations, it's like, but I have to get this done. I have to do this. What if you just rested?
Yeah.
What if you just took some time and rested? And the idea, you know, that we have to just keep going because that's what is expected of us is so ingrained that we just can't get past it. One of the exercises I do a lot when I start with new clients is, what does your ideal day look like? Mm-hmm. And most people come in, you know, with enough stuff to fill like 18 hours.
Like guns blazing, really.
It's like, when are you sleeping? And it's like, oh, what is sleep even, you know? And I resonate with that so hard because I lived there. That was where I was living when I got sick. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, you have to rest. Rest is just as important as anything else. Like the big three for me in my practice are food, water, and sleep. Mm. Nothing else is as important as those three. And so, yeah, just when you come back to yourself and you realize, as you say in your work, you help people come back to themselves. I think one of the things people realize when they come back to themselves, like initially, is that they have just been running themselves ragged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how much they have been, because this has been true for me personally, as well as with people that I've worked with, that they didn't have a realization about how far disconnected they were from themselves because they've just been like running on the hamster wheel of survival. And there's a lot to do with like trauma responses, which is something I'm getting into deeply with my work as well. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I love that you say that people are disconnected from themselves. That I see that all the time in my work. I'll say, you know, what makes you happy? Like, what do you do for fun? What makes you happy? They have no answers because they are so far disconnected from their inner self that they don't even know what they would do to have a good day.
Right.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I feel so passionately as I do about self-care is because you cannot live a fulfilled life if you are in a position where you don't even know how to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And trauma response, tr- trauma, PTSD, chronic illness, anxiety, all of it can lead to that disconnect so much. And for me, that was very, very true for me. I do see that a lot in my clients. I am 100% not a therapist. And where I'm at in Oklahoma, especially, I have to be very careful treading that line because of laws here. And so I have a wonderful network here in the state of behavioral health professionals that I can refer out to. But most of the time, the people who come to me have a great therapist. And sometimes that therapist has even said, like, maybe you need to, you know, think about your self-care.
Take a nap, maybe. That would be.
but yes, the exhaustion that comes with anxiety and trauma can really, really, not only does it wear you down, but it really contributes to that disconnect because you are so tired, you can't even really invest the energy. You're over your bandwidth. So you can't invest the energy into cultivating that relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
And so that relationship gets severed.
Yeah.
And then you kind of lose all desire, not desire, all ability to really care for yourself well, because that relationship has been severed.
Yeah. And my, the most important, I feel like, definition of trauma that I've integrated lately is from like the work of NARM and all, you know, Peter Levine and everyone who's doing like the somatic work. And they talk about how trauma is just simply a rupture in your relationship to yourself.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And it really starts, it really starts young, like developmental trauma versus shock trauma. Cause I know with like PTSD, people usually think about that when they think about trauma, but really we all have these ruptures in our relationship with ourselves that we needed to survive at a young age. And then we just started continuing down that road. And it's really interesting to me because it gets stored in our bodies, right? Like not being able to complete the stress cycle and just being like, oh, it's okay. I'll just defer that rest to later, or I'll just defer that play to later. Cause my big three are like play, rest, and work for fulfillment.
Yeah. Yes.
And play and rest are different. And like, exactly. As you mentioned before, people have a really hard time playing because they don't know how and they don't know what they want. And so they need help with guiding themselves back to what that even is. Yes. And so it's like, that idea of trauma, though, like staying in the body. And that's why we get sick, like physically. Yeah.
Hello.
So do you want to speak more to that?
sure. I know that my trauma went undiagnosed, not even undiagnosed, but ununderstood, misunderstood for a very long time by me, which led to me not being able to process it, which also led to me developing very, very deep anxiety, which again, like I said, I just thought was normal. Like I just thought the anxiety that I carry around every single day was how everyone lived. Right. And it was one of those aha moments for me when I realized it wasn't. I was like, oh, not everybody lives like this. That's an amazing thing.
Wild.
Yeah. And so, and mine was a combination of, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder from my surgeries, but also some developmental trauma, just from being a very small child who didn't have the normal small childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. So, when I finally got to young adulthood and hadn't processed any of that, and then had a traumatic incident, like mid high school, it was like, oh, hi, here's all my trauma. Don't know how to do this. Don't know, you know, it's like I was saying to you the other day, don't know what to do with my hands. Like, don't know how to handle that. And so it all kind of started manifesting itself at that point as extreme anxiety, with some depressive episodes. And, that anxiety is what propelled me later into this idea that no matter what was asked of me at work, no matter what was asked of me in my everyday life, I just had to do it. I had, I couldn't, my own expectations, my own health, my own, mental health was not as important as other people's expectations. And that is indeed how I got sick, because right. I was trying to do way too much. And my body finally just went, okay, if you're not going to listen to what we're trying to tell you, you're not picking up what we're putting down, let's just lay you out for a little bit, let you learn some things. And yeah. It did. And I did. But I really would have preferred not to have to go that route.
Right. Which is why we're doing this work, right? Because right. It was the same for me in a lot of ways, where it's like we're so disconnected from our bodies in our culture right now.
Yes. That
those of us who are doing this work, all of us have gone through a thing where we haven't known how to listen to what our bodies are telling us in small ways. And then those ruptures happen. And then our bodies create more systems to try to help us with that. So like anxiety, depression, to try to like make a buffer. It's almost like when you injure your ankle and you don't take care of it. Yep. And then your hip has to start like overcompensating, or, you know, yeah. the rest of your body, your whole system starts overcompensating. Yeah. To the
your
point
body keeps going, like, hi, hello, here I am.
Right. It's like, if you're not going to lay down, I'm going to make you lay down.
Exactly. Whoops. Yeah.
Hey, for me, that came in the form of like migraines and vertigo. And it's like, oh, okay, got it. I should have slowed down years ago. Listening now. Thank you very much.
Right. Thanks, body. Thanks. Quote unquote. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. Thanks so much. I think like another part of this that's really important to bring up is that just that I've read in some of your posts and things as well that I love is this talk about like how it's important to share our struggles with self-care. Yes. And yes. The shame around it, especially as we've said before, that it's like become a buzzword in the last few years.
Yes.
And there's so much shame that people carry of like, oh, I don't know if I'm doing this right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that I think is a really big roadblock to people even admitting they need to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Because they feel like, well, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, and I don't have the resources to do mm-hmm. that the right way. And so I'm not going to do it right now.
Right.
And like, spoiler alert, you can do it badly now.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay to do things badly?
Well, and you can't, like, here's the thing too. You really can't do it badly. But right. if you want to try to quote do it badly right now, it's going to help you even doing it right now a lot more than it's going to if you wait a few years to do it. Speaking from experience.
Oh, wow. It's just like the creative process. Weird.
Isn't that amazing? Amazing how that works. The struggles behind self-care are always very common. And, we keep trying something that isn't working because we feel like this should be working for us. This is what should be working. And why is this not working? Instead of just letting it go, like let that shit go. Like it does not, if it's not working for you, you don't need to be doing it.
Can you say that again?
Right. If this is not working for you, you do not need to be doing it.
My goodness.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big struggle that I think people hold on to, and they don't want to tell people this isn't working for me, because then they feel they have failed self-care somehow. You can't fail self-care. So your self-care is always that's the other thing. Your self-care is always evolving. It's always changing. You're always refining it. You're always learning new things about it. And so you can never really fail self-care because you're always gaining knowledge about it. And so that is a big struggle. And I think people feel like they can't share it. And then too, there are days that, you know, I mean, for me, especially as I've gone on, I was chronically ill. Then my husband got very chronically ill. Last year, at the end of the year, my husband died. I have been practicing self-care for, like I said, 7 years, 8 years now. I've been practicing it, you know, in a very regimented way for myself for about 5 now. Mm-hmm. And people think, oh, you have this completely under control. Like your self-care is so great. Okay. Hi, hello. No,
Let's have a vibe check real quick.
Right. We all have days that we struggle. And that's the other thing is you can practice self-care all day, every day. You can practice it very well. You can have, you know, a check for your self-talk. You can be very kind to yourself, and you're still going to have days where things just do not go well. Mm-hmm. And taking care of yourself feels like a very, very, very real struggle. And that's true for me right now. Yeah. And I don't just shut down and go to bed. I talk to you. I talk right. to our friends. I talk to my support group here in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I come to them and I'm very honest. And I say, today is not a good day. I am struggling. Here's where I'm at. And you have to do that as you, and you learn as you work through your self-care that doing that strengthens your self-care, because then you realize this is also me taking care of myself, sharing the struggle, letting other people support me. That is part of my self-care. Because there are days that we have one days where all we can do is eat a little bit of food and sleep all day and drink, you know, 10 ounces of water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have 10 days where everything on our habit tracker gets checked off and we, you know, see our friends and we have some socialization and we maybe, you know, get some stuff done in our house and we just have a really great day. But there's a whole lot of, you know, spectrum in between that, and self-care is a spectrum. And if we do not share our struggles on our one days, we cannot strengthen our self-care to get to our 10 days. And you have to be willing to talk it out, mm-hmm. because otherwise you can't sustain the work it takes to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are like really two themes that I saw coming out of everything that you were just saying is like, the first one is that us normalizing the fact that self-care is not like an event or something to attain, which is so connected to our societal like performance shit where we feel like we have to. It's the same with my work with helping artists and creatives. It's not about the product. It's about the process.
Exactly.
And health is not something to attain. I heard someone say recently this brilliant thing of that health is not getting to a place of peace or being good all the time. It's just movement. It's not a moment, it's movement. And it's cyclical, and normalizing the cyclical process, like weather moving through, like today is a cloudy day and then maybe tomorrow will be sunnier. And it's just part of the process. And then the other thing that I heard you talking about is the fact that community care is so tied to self-care. Like you can't have proper self-care without community care. And knowing like, if you feel alone in that, there are people who can help you. So part of self-care is asking for help.
Yes. And that's another thing that we completely have not normalized in our society. Yeah. As someone who's in deep grief, I can tell you, people are so shocked when I ask for help. When I say, hey, if you're at the store, could you get me a gallon of milk? It's like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to help you. Because people do not ask for help, right. even when they have been told over and over and over again, we would love to help you. Mm-hmm. And so we haven't normalized asking for help. We haven't normalized asking people to support us through things that aren't, you know, just incredibly tragic, you know, everyday things, you know, support through the everyday is not something that we ask for a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And then, going back to the first thing you said, mm-hmm. which was that you cannot attain self-care. I always say self-care is not a box you can check off. Yeah. You don't have self-care. You practice self-care. Mm-hmm. And it's just like with an instrument. You have to practice every day. You have to keep it going. You have to, you know, refine your skills. And you also have to know that some days are going to be okay and some days aren't, because that's how you learn. And you can't, you know, we don't, it's not like you practice self-care for, you know, X number of days, and then all of a sudden you're on some Zen cloud where you are just, you know, the self-care guru. It's just right. not how it works. You are right in both cases. And the idea that you can claim or have or just, you know, embody self-care all of a sudden is just not a thing. And I one of the reasons that I started coaching is because I wanted people out there who were doing what I had been doing to have support. And now when I meet with new clients, I always say to them, who is one person besides me that you can say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is the work I'm doing. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. And could you support me while I'm doing this work? And that's just because there are some days that I'm just not available. I try to be incredibly available to my clients, but, you know, I have office hours and I take weekends off and I have boundaries because I practice my own self-care. I walk my talk and I want them to have outside support because allies in self-care are so, so important. And when you have a community, you know, like when you've built a community that can support you, that's pretty large, that's a game changer because then you have so many opportunities to reach out to people.
And then you're not spending, I've noticed in the last year, for me at least, like the more community I have built through my self-care practices that have like continued asking for help and things like that, you get to a place where you have a certain momentum with it. And it, so if you fall flat on your face, you're not having to spend all that extra energy trying to reach out because there's already people there, like ready to hold your arms up.
Preach.
Absolutely. So I feel like this whole show episode is a preach session about
I've almost said that about four times. So I, you know, like, and here we are saying it again.
I love it. And so up to this point, we've talked about self-care in a very conceptual way almost. And I'd love if you would share for our listeners who maybe are at the very starting point there. I mean, if they listen to this podcast, hopefully they know what self-care is or at least have a concept of it. But if you're new, welcome. But if anyone is wondering like some practical ways to really get into this, what are some easy ways that you tell people that they can just get started with self-care in their life?
That's a great question. So I have what I call like my 10 beginner steps to self-care. Making sure you're eating, making sure you're drinking water. And by water, I don't mean water that's in coffee or water that's in tea or, you know, water that's in an energy drink. I mean water, the clear stuff that like comes out of a sink. And sleeping. So those are the big three. And if you're at the bare minimum, like if you are barely functioning, those three things are the three things you need to be focusing on. And don't get focused on what you're eating. Eat something, put something in your body. We get so caught up and hung up on, you know, oh, this is good food and this is bad food. And I do not subscribe to that in any way. I do intuitive eating. And so I do not assign categories to food. But if you are in a place where you cannot function, any kind of sustenance is the sustenance you need to be putting in your body. So food, water, clear water, and sleep are very, very important. And then reflecting in silence, any kind, like whether that's a walk in nature or meditation or prayer or some sort of other devotional way that you do things, any kind of just 5 minutes in silence is something that we don't give ourselves very much because we're always so busy. And it's very centering and it's probably something that we all kind of need to be doing every day. And then moving our bodies, not necessarily exercising, not necessarily going to an hour long spin class, but a dance, you know, just walking through your house, you know, enjoying it, whatever. I love that in the mornings you dance on your Instagram because it's just like, it's like, this is what we need. This is what we need in the morning.
Well, yeah. And I think we overthink it a lot.
We so overthink it.
And it's like all the time. Same with the food and the movement. There's all these shoulds around it. Like, yes. I move a lot all week and I do not have a gym membership. I hate going to the gym. It doesn't work for me. So if it doesn't work for you, do something. Like, I need community. So I dance outside in the park with my friends twice a week. That's right. What I do. Like, you know,
this goes back to, if this is not working for you, you don't have to do it.
Exactly.
Like, what's working for you, Molly? Hey, look, it's working for you. Amazing. Yep. Isn't it amazing how that works?
Yeah. And but we don't have to beat ourselves up about it anymore, because it's just
and wherever that's another
you
thing.
Are is where you are.
As humans, we've got to stop beating ourselves up about the majority of things. We are so we are so judgmental of ourselves. We are so hard on ourselves. We're just kind of bitches. I mean, we're mean girls half the time. And, you know, I talked yesterday on my Instagram about talking to yourself like you're your best friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was doing a lot of live workshops before the pandemic, and I would get out there and I would say, hey, is everybody really nice to themselves in their head? And everybody talks to themselves really sweetly, and you tell yourselves you're great. And, you know, everybody kind of would go, and then we would get to like, how do you talk to your best friend? And, you know, if your best friend calls you and is not having a good day, you're like, girl, you are amazing. You are fire. You are the best thing since sliced bread. And you need to get out there and show them how, like, you are a, you know, sun-filled goddess that deserves the best. I mean, we do not let our best friends feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
And we need to apply that to ourselves all day, every day. It's just the way that we need to be doing it. It's just the way we need to live. Anyway,
don't digress. It's beautiful. I love whenever we're in a business group together and whenever someone is having a hard time or struggling, I love that you come in the comments, Allison, and are just like, be nice to my friend, like with the finger of truth. Like,
yes.
Stop it.
And I say that.
I say that to myself because there's so many, there's almost like a panel. I've talked about this on the podcast too. There's like a panel of voices. There's always a cacophony and your brain is not necessarily you. So it's okay for you to be like, hey girl, chill the fuck out.
Yep.
It's all right. We got this. You're doing amazing. Like, it's okay.
Sit down.
Like talking to a small child sometimes as well. Just like, it's okay, babe. Like, let's get a juice box for you. This is going to be fine.
Okay. Let's take a nap. I did a consult last night and in my like first, like, you know, intro call when I sign a new client, one of the things we go over about my services is that I do not let them be mean to themselves. And I'm like, if you come to a call and you're being a little like mean or like self-derogatory, I'm going to call you out on that shit. And I'm gonna tell you to be nice to my friend. And they're always kind of like, and I'm like, no, really? Like you have no idea. I wish you could talk to the people who have come before you because you really have no idea what you're getting yourself into.
Just know when you sign this contract, I will be calling you out on your mean girl shit.
It's not gonna fly here.
Yep.
Okay. Back to practical steps. So that's where we were. Silence, moving. And then the other one is calling in for support. That's a really good one. And then, I kind of got lost. Calling in for support, calling an ally.
You can doodle it out.
Can doodle it out. Some sort of creative outlet is always good. And then, like engaging in a hobby, that's kind of doodling it out is another kind of way of doing that. Mm-hmm. Most of the beginner ways that I suggest are ways that you are connecting back to your body or literally or figuratively feeding your body in some way. And so those are kind of the things I focus on because we're trying to build back that connection. And then the other thing, a practical step that I give to everybody because it's just not done enough is I have them write down three things they're thankful for that day. And you can be like, some days when I was in the real thick of it, the things that I was thankful for is that, you know, I'm thankful that I did not yell at someone today. Like, you can be thankful for terrible shit because some days are terrible. You do not have to be, you know, this idea of toxic positivity. You don't have to be like, I'm thankful that, you know, everything is wonderful and sunshine and rainbows. Nope. Fuck that. Yeah. You can be, you know, I'm thankful that I survived the day. But three little things that you're thankful for. It can be, I'm thankful for my dog. I'm thankful for my car. I'm thankful for my front door. I mean, you know, nothing big. But it kind of gets you into that headspace of what's around me. What am I actually engaging with, and kind of gets you out of that, like autopilot place because you have to engage with your surroundings. And so those are, you know, those are some of the things that I kind of throw out there when people are like, how, where do I start here? Like, where do I even begin? And you know,
I love that. It made me think of, there's a Rob Bell quote where he talks about, if you want joy, lower the bar.
And yes.
I very much ascribe to that, because it's like with my clients as well, instead of, you can't like have a collection or painted painting or like create a career or anything like that without first focusing on just what's in front of you. And so I love the gratitude practice of just like, oh, there's a rainbow on the bubbles when I was washing the dishes. That's cool.
Right.
Like, you know, like tiny, tiny things all around you. So that's really great. Is there anything else that you want to touch on before we go into our rapid fire session that you don't think that we've talked enough about?
We've done a lot here. I feel good about where we've been. Yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. And there's so many places that we could go for follow-up episodes as well. So I'm like,
there really are. Well, you go a lot of places. Yeah.
A whole self-care series with Allison and Molly. Awesome. So I love to finish out with rapid fire because they're just fun questions.
Okay.
So whatever comes to your head first. So what is your favorite way to recharge right now?
My favorite way to recharge right now is renovating the dollhouse that I bought off Facebook Marketplace.
That brings me so much joy.
It does. Me too. It is the greatest thing I mean, it is so great. It's great. I'm so enjoying it.
So what are you obsessed with right now?
What am I obsessed with right now? Honestly, I'm really kind of obsessed with like foreign language detective murder mysteries on Netflix. I have been through so many of them. Wow. And I watched this French one not too long ago. And now I'm on Duolingo learning French again, because I realized that I've recognized a lot of the words. Because I studied French for years in high school, and I was like, I could do this. I could still learn French. So now I'm on Duolingo because I watched this French detective show.
You're like, I could do this. I could speak French and I could solve this case in French.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know who the killer is. Yeah, for sure.
Phenomenal. So what is the last TV binge that you loved?
Oh, you cut out. What was?
Oh, what was the last TV binge that you loved?
Last TV binge I loved was probably, I binged the entire last season of Superstore.
Amazing.
Because I kept it. I had like kept it because I, you know, it was ending and I knew like I was going to be so sad. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't start it and I waited until it was over. And then I just went like all the way through it. It was so good. I loved it so much.
I'm adding it to my list because so many people have told me that it's a great show.
It is so good. It is so good. And it's so clever.
Amazing. I will watch that. What is something in your everyday that makes you smile?
Ooh, my dogs. When they're not being little shits, my dogs make me smile a whole lot.
They've been pretty good. We only had some barking towards the beginning.
just a little barking. And I don't know that you can hear it, but the little one's been at the door whining a couple times because she's like, the door is shut.
I haven't been able to hear it, but poor baby. There will be some aggressive cuddling after this.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
What's on your playlist?
What is on my playlist? There is a whole lot of Dua Lipa on my playlist right now. Quite a bit of Taylor Swift. And who else is on my playlist right now? Quite a lot of the Jonas Brothers.
I'm here for it.
That's where I'm at.
You got to listen to things that bring you joy too.
Exactly.
And so where can we find you?
You can find me several places. My website is allisonbarronsbrawley.com. And I'm on Instagram, which is kind of my platform of choice, at allisonbarronsbrawley. And then I'm on Facebook at allisonbarronsbrawley, the self-care enthusiast.
Love it. And I'll have those things all in the show notes for everybody who's watching later. And this was amazing. Thank you
This
so
was
much,
amazing.
Allison.
I have had the best time. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I can't wait until this episode drops. But till then, we will be hanging out, self-caring, and chatting on Instagram.
Always.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for being here with me. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for coming back on this journey with me as we navigate what the Darling Revolution looks like moving forward. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review on iTunes. That really, really helps us to get some visibility. And if you really loved it, send it to a friend who you think would appreciate it as well. I'll see you next time. Bye for now, friend.